I'm your host, Rena Friedman-Watts, and this is the Better Call Daddy Show.
Hey, this is Big Daddy, Wayne Friedman.
That's my grandpa. Grandpa, you ready for more daddy drama?
My dad is my number one hero and number one fan.
And I'm a pretty cool dude.
All right, season four, baby, here we go.
More stories you're not going to believe.
And maybe you will after you listen.
5 stars.
5.5 stars, 2 thumbs up.
You are a pretty cool dude.
Love you, Mommy.
Don't stand on the table and damn the public. You'll get some words of wisdom to live by.
Here we go again. Better call Daddy.
You know what your problem is? You like me.
Yeah, I do. Each week, I interview a guest, share the stories with my dad, and then he weighs in at the end of every episode with his wisdom and wit.
Hey, Grandpa.
Everyone from influential players to inspirational fathers and, of course, controversial people.
Grandpa, my mom is calling.
Creating that legacy one call at a time. And welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show.
Stay tuned.
Where's the music?
Better call Daddy because he knows you best. Better call Daddy because he's bringing the test. He sees possibilities. Better call Daddy, you're the apple of his eye. He sees possibilities. All to be.
Fighting for theater survival is real. Today, I'm giving a plug for a place I love locally here in Houston, the Fourth Wall Theater. I'm interviewing the managing director, Jennifer Dean. Jennifer, welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show.
It's Rena and Alicia teaming up for an interview. I am so excited to have guest Jennifer Dean here today. She is running the Fourth Wall Theater here in Houston, and she has a production coming up called Our Father, which is perfect for the Better Call Daddy Show and for the Senora Vibes podcast.
Yes.
She is a daddy's girl.
I am a daddy's girl. Yes. Certified.
Yeah. We are really excited. It's a play called The Father by Florian Zeller. It was adapted into a movie a few years ago. I actually won a couple Oscar awards. And of course, I think thematically appropriate for the show. But the play I was telling Alicia earlier, it's about a man who told from his kind of point of view, like you're watching the play through his eyes as he's coming to understand and reckon with dealing with dementia and kind of the effect that has on his life. And it's just, it's a really beautifully done play. Of course, a difficult subject, but it's a really well done, beautiful story.
Speaking of difficult subjects, I went to see The Pavilion.
Yes.
And I feel like that was a difficult subject.
Elements of that one, yes, absolutely. Yeah, The Pavilion was our first show of this current season. And three actors, I was in that one. And then we had our artistic director, Philip Lael, played about 17, 18 different characters.
Wow.
Yeah, he was terrific. And then Luis Galindo was in it. And it was a high school reunion, 20 years, and dealing with loss and forgiveness and redemption. And there were some undercurrent themes of abortion and, you know, the dramatic impact that that had on their trajectory of life. And so, yeah, we got to talk about that a little bit one day over coffee and just kind of.
Is that how y'all met?
We met through a mutual friend.
Okay.
She kind of got us together, and then Rena came to see the show. No. And so that was one of our first kind of introductions.
Yeah. That brought up a lot because I went with my husband and, you know, it's interesting to think about going back to a high school reunion and coming back into contact with somebody you may have had a relationship with and a relationship that may have been unresolved.
Right.
Why?
I mean,
there was so much about that play that I think people resonated with. There's just so much universal themes. Once you get really to that 20, 25, I can't tell you how many people came up after the play and were like, I'm about to go to my high school reunion, or I just went to one, or this just made me think of that. There, you hear my stomach? It's making
Wow.
That time of our life. We're still, you know, we're just figuring things out. And there's something very pure and passionate about some of those first loves and kind of you're thrust into in that stage of life. And then to come back and revisit some of that, there's the nostalgia, there's the what ifs, there's just so much about it, even if you're have moved on with your life. And the play resonated with people in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Like, how do you pick the parts that you choose to act in versus cast.
Right. So my role at the theater is managing director. So I oversee the bulk of like the administrative business side of things, you know, the development, fundraising, the finances, the marketing, and then our artistic director, Philip Lael. And we work very closely with each other to decide on shows. And ultimately, you know, he makes the final call. The Pavilion is a play that he had done 20 years ago at Stages Theater here in town. And it was a role that he always wanted to revisit when he was a little bit closer to the actual age. And so it's a play that he's wanted to do for years. Mm-hmm. And we had originally planned to do it in the spring of 2020. And so then when everything kind of shut down, they just kind of kept it on the back burner. So we decided to bring it back this fall. And of course, he asked me again if I wanted to be in it. The typical process is you have auditions, and Houston is a really big theater community. There's a ton of actors in town, and there's a pool of people that we know really well, that we work with a lot, actors that kind of, you know, our aesthetic of acting, understand that kind of like intimate environment and just genuine, truthful, authentic acting. And so sometimes we know people that we want, you know, that we're like, this role is perfect for this person if they're available. And then sometimes we have auditions and just see, you know.
Yeah, they can't shy away from big topics either, right? They can't be hypersensitive about some of the things that you want to talk about in in these plays.
Yeah. And then sometimes we do stuff that's just fun. Like we did Sense and Sensibility for Christmas. And,
oh, that's, you know, fun.
It was fun and music and dance. And
what if somebody doesn't have acting experience? Can we still go and audition if we wanted to do that?
You know what? Anybody can audition, but the reality is we are a professional equity theater. So most of the people we're going to cast have had training, whether it was conservatory training or have, you know, they've studied and are, you know.
Some sort of background.
Right. Okay. Background in theater. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Talk a little bit about how you got into theater and a little bit about your background.
Yeah. So I come from a family of performers in a small. My grandfather studied theater in college, and then my mom studied journalism. She ended up being a mom and just staying home, but she, you know, we have that kind of background. And then I decided kind of at an early age that I was fairly quiet and reserved, but I loved like performing for my family. Like I would like write plays and stand on the fireplace and perform for my parents. And I think it was probably high school when I really got into theater. You know, I joined the theater troupe at our school and I performed. And then I decided sometime in high school that that's what I wanted to study in college. So I went to college with the intent of studying acting. And my parents were always like, okay, if that's what you want to do. Nice. And I had so many friends who like loved theater, and but their parents were like, yeah, but you got to do something else. Like you got to have a backup. And my parents were like, if this is what you want to do, which was really amazing of them that they always supported that. So I studied it in college. And then with the intent of becoming an actor afterwards, and then over the years have fallen into some of the administrative side of things. That's what I tell people who want to be involved in theater is don't just make a narrow, like, I want to be an actor. Like, open yourself up to everything that there is to offer, whether it's backstage or the business side of it. You know, there's so many things that make it happen. And once you know this, it opens you up to more and more opportunities. So I kind of did the reverse. I wanted to be an actor, and now I'm in the business.
I feel like you can relate to that with your own son because he's getting into production, and he's had to learn the business aspects and the behind the scenes.
Right, and that's why we still keep him in school because, you know, they say, well, what? You don't even need college for that anymore. You do. You do need to learn so many other parts. Like he's doing script writing. He's doing set design, graphics. Like, all of that is part of,
huge.
Of being an artist, you know? It's not just acting.
Like she was saying. Understanding, like, what it takes to construct a story.
To put something together.
To, you know, from beginning to end, what makes it interesting and compelling, and to understand how the set is put together. There's so many elements people have no idea. They're like, how do you memorize lines? Well, that is such a small part of the entire process. Mm-hmm. So that's terrific.
How do you memorize lines?
That is a good idea. I was thinking when she said that, like, how really do you do that?
I will say,
is there a secret?
I mean, there are different tricks that some people use. There's different methods. But I will say, I tell people it's muscle memory. You know, it's like your daughter who's playing basketball. You practice throwing a free throw and you do the same movement over and over and you memorize how it feels in your body. So part of the rehearsal process is you have the script, you go through it, you read it multiple times. sometimes you read it out loud, you read it with the other actors, then you get up on your feet and you start to say, okay, I say this line when I'm here and I move when I say this line because of the impulse to connect with this person. And you set those things and you repeat them night after night after night. So in a lot of ways, it's muscle memory. There are little tricks and things that you can do, but really for us with at Fourth Wall, we really believe in kind of this truthful, grounded. And so it's so much about the connection with the other people and the relationship that you're trying to be in the moment of, I'm saying this to this person because this is what they're doing to me and I'm responding this way. And so it becomes very authentic.
Have you ever been mismatched with another actor where you're like, it doesn't feel good?
Yeah, I've been in shows where, you know, there's a lot of acting going on.
Oh, really?
There's times when it just all gels. Like Pavilion was
like
one of those.
Like overacting or a lot of acting? Like they're trying too hard?
Yeah, like they're trying too hard. God. They don't know what they're doing.
You know
doing.
Who I think is an overactor? Bradley Cooper. I can't watch anything he does because I think he's one of those people that tries too hard.
And you can pick up on it.
It's not natural. Yeah, I don't know why I always think about that.
And that's on film, too. So that's, you know, like you have to be super subtle on film.
Yeah.
I did a commercial audition once, and they kept telling me, can you do less? Do less. So you feel like you're, like, barely moving.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm always wondering, like, have you ever had to make out with someone that you didn't want to?
Well, I haven't actually had to do that. I did have, like, it was a love interest situation in the play, but there was no like physical component to it. But yeah, the actor was not, he had no training. He had never done anything. And I don't even understand really, but he was a super nice guy, but he wasn't an actor, you know? And so there was a lot of like me trying to convince myself that I really genuinely feel this way about this person.
And then I'm wondering, too, like, have you seen that that can be a problem in relationships?
Well, I mean, you hear about that all the time. I mean, even like in movies, you see people who, you know, they may be in a relationship and then they get cast somebody else. And there is something about the intensity of being and the vulnerability of being in that situation where you're being honest and truthful as this other person. And there's a connection you develop with other people. It's a very, you know, vulnerable thing. But you have to remember at the end of the night, like, okay, I dropped that. That's not me. And that's not who you are. And we may have a great chemistry or connection as these characters on stage. And I'm not trying to dismiss people who genuinely fall in love with their co-stars or something.
Their choreographer.
Right?
What are you talking about?
What's that one from the ballet movie?
Natalie Portman, the Black Swan.
Did she fall in love with her choreographer? Oh, I didn't know that.
I think they had a kid together.
That's how she got married.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Not sure if that worked out. Yeah.
Well, that's a fun fact that I had no idea about.
It happens. It does happen. And I do think there are genuine relationships that, you know,
They're spending close, right?
Especially on movie sets, you're spending a lot of time with people.
Together.
And so, but it's under very intense circumstances. So then it's like the reality is once you remove all of those circumstances, is there a legitimate relationship beyond that? And sometimes there is.
Question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there is.
And why have you focused on theater? Can you talk about the different kinds of acting that you've done?
I mean, I've predominantly focused on live theater. I've done a little bit of like commercial work. I've had, you know, one or two lines in some like very small independent movies. But for me, there's something about live theater. It's very in the moment. The audience becomes like that final character. Mm-hmm. And so every night is different. Whereas when you're doing a movie, and some people love this, but you know, you do like one or two rehearsal takes, then you shoot it three or four times, and then it's done, and you move on to the next thing. And you may not even be doing it in consecutive order. It's jumping all over the place. And so for me, there's just something when you're live theater and you're there on stage in the moment and the audience is reacting, whether it's laughter or you can hear them sometimes like sniffling.
There's an energy of it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, any performer who says they don't like audience feedback is lying, because otherwise, why would you get up there and do it? But for me, it's just like the moment of creating this story and this reality of who these people are and connecting to open people's identities and points of view to see the world through somebody else's eyes.
Yeah.
There's a guy who says theater is like an empathy gym. And so we sit in the space together and we learn how to empathize. We learn how to see the world through somebody else's eyes. We might be encountered with somebody that we would never rub elbows with in our life. And so we're able to see something and to walk away from it. Sometimes it's purely entertainment to remove ourselves from the stress of the moment of our life and to laugh and to enjoy. But sometimes it really is like, okay, let's look at the world through somebody else's eyes and consider it. And I think in this day and age, we need that more than ever. Sure. To be able to sit in a space and go, okay, yeah. I can see something from someone else's point of view in a less threatening way than maybe reading about it in the news or experience it in an argument with somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, to be able to really understand, okay, this person, this human and their point of view. We did a play last year called Sanctuary City by Martina Mayock. It took place right after September 11th and it deals with immigration. Mm-hmm. And two under 18-year-olds who had been, you know, brought to the country by their parents illegally,
yeah.
And but had grown up here. Like, this was the only home they ever knew. Right. And then after September 11th, so much changed in, like, the sanctuary cities and the laws and their reality of, okay, so now what do we do? Do we stay? Do we go? This is the only home we've ever known. And to be able to tell that story and to humanize it,
yes,
for people who maybe just see statistics and numbers and
don't know that perspective.
And don't know that person and that perspective. And so it was a really important show for us to be able to say, look, let's just look at the world through somebody else's eyes.
That's the beauty of art.
Right. Mm.
That is the beauty of art in any sense, whether it's storytelling, whether it's a piece of art on right. your wall. Everything has a story and there's always a background to everything. And I think that's the beauty about art, that there's no language to it. You can see it. You can visualize it. You can feel it.
Right.
Like you can everybody, sense it.
You have
yeah.
to agree.
No.
But just consider.
Yeah.
Just understand.
It's a personal experience.
Right. Have that. Take a moment to try and understand from somebody else's sure. perspective.
I love that. I was just going to say, like, how many people right now have absolutely. Friends with opposing political views, oh, are absolutely. Open to having yeah. conversations.
Yeah, of course.
And there's something less threatening about it
yes.
in that environment. So
definitely.
It's important. Very important.
Talk a little bit about, like, some of your favorite roles.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, Pavilion is definitely up there. That's one of those just I hadn't actually acted in about 6 years. Part of it was just timing of the world and COVID and everything that happened. Part of it was the transition of my life to more management. Part of it was I have a young daughter and that season of life. So it was one of those, like, really great plays to kind of come back into. Perfect group of people, the director, the actors. It was just a lovely, lovely experience. The script was beautiful. The story had that emotional catharsis to it. So that was one of the top ones for sure.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It was
thank
so good. Yes.
You.
I am so
thank
glad
you.
I got to witness that.
I
yes.
too. And the audience is really engaged with it, you know? So I was.
And
was
how do you promote these? Because I don't hear
right?
much.
So we've been around. We're in the middle of our 13th season.
Okay.
So we're still in some ways a fairly new theater and we're
okay.
a smaller theater. Our space seats 100. So it's a black box, small theater space. And I find this true about a lot of theaters. I've worked for other theaters too. Like, Houston is such a big city. Mm-hmm. You can have something that's been around for years and people are like, I've never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do the things that other people do. We do advertising through social media. We do some print ads, although some of them are way out of our budget range. We do digital advertising. Every now and then we'll do some radio spots. We try and do stuff like this where we meet people and we're like, hey, let's talk about our shows. Let's talk about who we are. Reviews that will come from people seeing the shows that might get published, although even those are getting less and less because as the newspaper moves more and more digital, you know, theater reviews don't always get a lot of clicks and it's about clicks. So, you know, we do word of mouth. Obviously, we have our season ticket holder basis and we really encourage them. Bring friends, invite people. And we try and do mail campaigns, all of that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Right.
But we're small space.
I feel like the only way I find out about things is if it's on Instagram.
Yeah,
or
but we have.
Right?
No, we do.
I mean, that's terrible, but
no,
that's
but
that
true. That's how people find out.
Or if some
stuff.
Influencer posts, you know, will post something, then I'm like, oh, I need to go check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we have Instagram and we have Facebook. We don't really do a lot with TikTok. It's hard to do a lot
so
for us.
Consuming.
Yeah. And, you know, most of our actors are just contract. Like, they just come in and do one show. And so there's not a lot of consistency of building up necessarily an audience on, you know, TikTok for
right.
our performers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we try and do stuff where we can. But continuing to build out that following and get people to hear about us. So that's why doing stuff like this is so amazing. So
yay.
Thank you.
And we love having you.
Thanks. Thanks. It's fun to talk about. People don't think about all of that. So, yeah.
I'm curious how being a mom has changed you as an actress. And can you talk a little bit about that chapter?
Yeah, I think every chapter of life, you know, changes just because you have the world experience to be able to identify more. I was late to motherhood, and so I was able to have a decent time before I had a child. But then to be an older mother, I think also gives you a different perspective. Mm-hmm. When I was in college, our professors used to say, you don't really understand acting. You don't really get it until you've done it for about 20 years. And we would all be like, okay, whatever. But now, having been in the industry for like 20 years, I'm like, oh, I get it. Because there's a certain amount of insecurities that we carry, I think, especially as young women, you know, that we don't want to do things that make us look foolish or silly. And so we put up a little bit of a guard and we portray what we think people want to see, even as an actor when you're acting. So really letting down that guard and just being like, I don't care. I just want to be authentic. I want to be vulnerable. I want to be real. And then having that experience of just different stages of life, it's just knowledge that's in the back of your mind now that you can tap into. And so all of those things help, whether you've been a mother or a wife, or you've just worked for years, you just have more life experience. We were talking earlier about as our parents are aging and those experiences of loss or illness, all of that shapes who you are, and then you're able to access it. And it's not so much about, like, you hear people talk about, like, method acting, but it's more about just being able to understand those life experiences. So as a mother now, I've been able to tap into a little bit more of what it feels that like selfless, you put somebody else before you without even thinking about it, you know, just that kind of understanding, that kind of love and commitment. It's changed me because I prioritize things differently. You know, there's times when I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do a play because I need to be home and present in my life here.
Yes.
And so I may have to let this opportunity pass me by, but then trusting that what's for me is still to come. Yeah. I'm not going to miss it. And that this time in her life, she's our only child. This time in her life.
And how old?
She's 7.5.
Okay.
Like, we only get this once. And so I need to be there. So that's shifted some of my priorities, where times in my life I would have been like, yeah, sure, I'll do a play, I have nothing else going on. And now I'm like, no, I need to be home. So that's changed a little bit of it.
Is she interested in the arts?
It's hard to tell. So my husband's also in theater, and she's very familiar around. She's seen so many plays already at this age, and she understands a lot of what goes into it just because she's been around the buildings and stuff. And she will talk about, like, I want to be a singer, like Taylor Swift when I grow up. I'm like, yeah. Okay, well, who doesn't when you're 7, you know? And she'll talk about wanting to be in a play and stuff. But I don't know if she's really, you know, that level of commitment. I don't know. Like, you have to show up every night, whether you feel like it or not.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We're still trying to figure out. She's done gymnastics and now she's
done volleyball. But I'm guessing you won't keep her from it.
Oh, absolutely not.
To pursue.
Absolutely not.
I feel like you're open to see where it takes her, where she wants to go, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, some parents kind of lead their kids in a certain direction, and some parents are like, whatever my child, you know, gravitates to, that's what we'll support.
Right. I mean, it's not an easy business. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of rejection. There's a lot of, you know,
that heartbreak.
And it can become like very self-focused, you know, worrying about like your appearance or how you look and all that kind of stuff. And so there's things like that you're like, oh, I don't necessarily want you to have to struggle with all that and go through all that. But I mean, the reality is every job has their challenges.
Yeah.
So if that's what really drives her, something in the arts, then of course we want to support that.
Have you thought about like your vision, your mission, your purpose, all of those things? How does that tie in?
Like personally with theater, I think it goes back a little bit to what I was saying earlier is I think storytelling really can change people's lives. It really can open them up to think about something they haven't thought about before, to engage in a conversation that maybe they hadn't had before. And I think there's something about art and storytelling and that just it connects us. I think in our culture today that is so divided and so angry. And I think there's times where people just, they're like, I don't even know how to have this conversation with a family member. Yeah. And to be able to say, well, you know, come see this show and maybe it will just open the door for a slight change of perspective or a conversation. And I think that can be life-changing if people really can affect you. And so I think that's part of why I do what I do, is knowing that sometimes we just need an escape. We just need something to make us laugh, to feel joy,
yes,
maybe a little bit of hope. And then sometimes we need something that really is going to challenge us. And so that's, I think, part of my mission, is to just give people those opportunities, whether it's one or the other. And it's hard.
So important.
I mean, there's days when you're, you know, as a nonprofit, we're filling out grant applications and trying to get fundraising. And sometimes it's hard because you're like, I mean, at the end of the day, what are we doing? We're entertaining adults. Mm-hmm. And then to just be reminded about, no, it's bigger than that. It really is bigger than just putting on a play. You know,
it's like they say in those books, like you always have to keep your why, why you're doing it, always at the forefront, because there's so many distractions. Like you said, funding,
right,
or am I going to fill in, you know, fill enough spaces? Are the seats right, going to be good? You know, it's the opening of the play. Are we going to have enough exposure? Right. Like, you're thinking about so many other things that you forget the why.
Right.
Like why you even started it from.
And one of the missions of Fourth Wall is the paying of artists, because as you guys probably know, it is really hard, especially in a city like Houston, for artists to do this as a full-time job. Mm-hmm. I would say 98% of the people who work for us also have another job. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to say part of our mission is to be able to pay them. Look, we can't pay you a living wage because you only work with us for like 7 weeks. So mm-hmm. that 7 weeks isn't going to cover you for the rest of the year. But when you're here, that we can pay you well for the time that you're committing to us so that you can do your job well, that you can feel fulfilled. Mm-hmm. So that's a heart of what Fourth Wall is to pay their artists. And so that's something that, you know, come back to as well. Like what you do, the time that you have spent in training and all of that is worth being compensated. And so we want to invest in you just like you're investing your time in us. We want you to feel valued when you're in our space. So
I love that. I love the work that you're doing. Tell us what's coming up next.
Yes. So the next play is The Father, is April 26th through May 11th, I believe, if I have my dates correct. While we're recording this, we have another play that's going on, Thanksgiving play. But I think by the time this airs, The Father will be the next one up. And we have tickets available. And then sometime around April, we will be announcing our season for the next year. So that'll be exciting. We have some really cool titles that we're looking forward to for the next season. And one of the best ways to support us is season tickets. And it's the best price too. But you're committing to be in our space 4 times a year, seeing the work, building relationship with us, investing in the theater. And it's the best deal too for tickets. So yeah, but The Father coming up April, May.
Where do we get tickets?
You can go to fourthwalltheaterco.com is our website. We have an Instagram at Fourth Wall, a Facebook page, but yeah, online. And you can also call us. All of that information is out there if you search Fourth Wall Theater. And it's theater with an R-E.
Amazing.
R-E. Okay. I'm glad you said that.
We just recently discovered that there's a Fourth Wall Theater that started in Louisiana. So we're like, oh no. At least we're in different states. So hopefully people will figure that out.
Well, I'm so glad that you're mentioning that, because I do love to go to plays. I just never know when they are or where they are. You know, I live on this side of town and I have to go inside the city, which is fine. I'm excited to go inside the city. But like, I want to know those things. And
a great way to stay in tune with what we're doing, obviously, is to follow us like on Instagram or Facebook. But we also have an email that comes out every other week that has dates and information. So if you go to our website, you can sign up for our email. And then you'll be able to get those email reminders, because, we are all so busy. I mean, I think like 7 times you have to see something before you actually take action on it. So, yeah.
I mean, I personally think the key to a good marriage is date night.
Yeah.
I invested in date night with my husband for 7 years and I had another baby. But
well, then it worked.
And we have done things like CrossFit and improv and checking out new places in town.
Yeah, is a great date idea.
There's
some really cool restaurants in the area. Mm-hmm. We're in the Sawyer Yards kind of arts district area, so I-10 almost to downtown. So you don't have to go all the way to downtown. No. But there's some really cool restaurants. Our building is an art gallery, so get there a little earlier and you can walk around and look at the art and then see the play. Yeah, it is a great thing. And if you have it on your calendar, then you know 4 times a year we're going to the play.
And I think it's fun to do with friends, too, because like you said, if you're talking about difficult conversations and this is a way that you might be able to broach those subjects.
So true.
You know, in a creative way. I think that is a way to learn, a way to grow, a way to have like real friendships and, you know, a great date night. So thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Thank you for having me so much.
Awesome.
I appreciate it.
I can't wait to hear what my dad has to say, too.
Yeah. I want to know what he has to say. I'm sure he's going to be excited to go to a play himself. Like, he seems to me like a very lively, vivacious man.
He loves the arts. My dad loves the arts, and he's always been wanting me to incorporate music or to get on stage. And he never said that it wasn't something I couldn't do full time either. So I love parents who feel that way.
Absolutely.
I do, too.
Absolutely.
You've heard from my mom. Now, let's switch it over to Grandpa.
So this was a live interview with Jennifer and Alicia.
Well, Jennifer is making a comeback, I take it, to acting, where she took some time off to raise her family, it sounds like. And isn't it quite ironic that, you know, we have the Derby Dinner Playhouse. I even tried to get you to try out for Fiddler on the Roof over there, if you remember. And, you know, they used to bring in all the old timers into the playhouse. And then, you know, these old timers stopped doing it and they got really too old and faded away. And what do you do next? Okay. And they had to really develop some young talent. And some of the popularity of it went down even a little bit. And a couple of them in the Louisville, Indiana area, they closed up. There was a couple of them that closed up. And then, of course, Louisville, you know, built that new center and it started to revive it a little bit. And they got people from out of town that would play on Broadway would come. But what's interesting is that Jennifer's part of like a Derby Dinner. It's a small playhouse. And just being an actor isn't really cutting the mustard necessarily, because you have to really know how to advertise, you have to know how to direct, you have to know how to put on not only shows, but you have to really learn the whole business to put on a set. And you have to be able to do it in a manner where you have to know the ins and outs of the business world as well to make it work. So when a person wants to go to acting school, the jobs can come far and in between different gigs. And you have, you know, people that go to Hollywood, they better be a good waitress or a bartender or a waiter while they're waiting for their next gig. But because of the complications to this industry, it's the same thing in my own business, is what did my dad tell me, is that you better learn how to do every operation if you want to be able to have your own business. And Jennifer is doing the same thing. She's really learning the whole business so that if someone's not there or they have to really rely on her to fill in many different functions, that she can do that. And to run a little acting derby dinner or putting on shows is not as easy as it might appear. And it's not as glorious as it might appear. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of extra hours. And you better really know the whole business and know how to put on a production and know the marketing and the costs if you want to have a chance for it to be successful. The other part of this interview was that people that are doing this acting, even brought up how there's even where certainly in a romantic flick, do the characters sometimes put on such a good act where they actually feel it. They feel the characters that they're portraying. And how many actors and actresses even end up playing the part in real life, too, where they think that this is meant to be for them and where a lot of them get hooked up. And then all of a sudden they're on new shows with new actors and new actresses, and the flame from the previous movie or show dies out and they've got a new fling with someone else. So isn't it something that to be really a terrific actor or actress, you really have to feel the part and portray that part to where you're almost living as a different person. And sometimes people that are in certain roles, they end up not really knowing what's reality in the movie.
Becoming the role.
They become that role. So sometimes a really good actor or actress also gets stuck sometimes in that same role where they can't even get another job because they look at that person as only playing that one role.
So, like Pennywise or like the Joker.
Right. What that guy played, such an evil Joker, one of the worst villains I'd ever seen, and yet he got very depressed and killed himself afterwards. So the truth of the matter is that we have to be careful to make sure that an actor or an actress understands that it's La La Land, it's not real. And yet sometimes it can grab a hold of you and suck you in. And I think you have to be careful of that.
Thanks for listening. Now I think I'm going to go call my dad.
I'll say goodbye and see you the next time.
Thanks for listening to the Better Call Daddy show. Join us weekly for new episodes and more daddy wisdom.
Better Call Daddy is good advice always.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. You can also find special episodes on my YouTube channel, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Amazon Music, Alexa, or your preferred podcatcher. That's a wrap for now.